on the 1 yard line with their backs against the wall.
This ain't a game to me. If you think it's a game, get the fuck off of this bus.
Welcome one, welcome on, welcome back to the Believe in Iowa State podcast. I'm your host, Tyler Carter.
And I'm your host, Cody Van Cialello.
Cody, West Virginia came to play on Saturday, and it was a rough night offensively for our boys as the Cyclones go down in Morgantown.
63 to 55
was the final score. Oh, no, 64-57, that was the score, yeah. So they had to go down 64-57. 57 points was the Cyclones' lowest point total of the season, shooting 1 of 17 from 3. That was just dismal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that this was probably the worst performance that I've seen out of Iowa State this year. And, I mean, for this to be our second loss of the year, it kind of sucks how this had to be the day where we went 1 of 17 for shooting. Really didn't get anything, but I mean, this is just kind of one of those things where, like, eventually the Milan injury was going to catch up. It just sucked that it came, like, at this time. And I mean, you were, what, number 2 in the country? You were trying to get closer to a number 1 spot. But, I mean, I was listening to the Keyshawn Gilbert, Nate Heisia presser, and they just talk about, like, it's just going to move on, learn from it, and it's going to make them be better basketball players. And I think that was basically the message out of the locker room, basically the message that was sent after the loss. So I think this loss will ultimately make Iowa State a better squad because they know for sure that there's still a lot of work to do. They always talk about like how like there's always a way you can get better. And I think this game certainly showed that, number one, we need a secondary scorer outside of Curtis Jones who can hit threes consistently. And number two, this still shows that the Big 12 is still a very competitive conference, even with the new addition, all the additions through realignment. So this is still going to be a tough place to play. And especially if you're on the road in the Big 12, it will be a tough time to get wins. But that's what you have. That's why you play in the Big 12.
Definitely, man. Like, I obviously didn't expect to, go through this thing 20-0. I figured some losses were coming. Just was sort of disappointing the way they were shooting. I mean, otherwise, if you look at their performance, Jefferson Jefferson had another great performance, 12-12. But one thing I do want to talk about, this is just about the three-point shooting. Just a question to ask you, Cody. Do you think that this three-point shooting will get figured out, or do you think that this could be an ongoing issue of long-term until Milan gets back?
I am in the belief that this, like, should be a one-off. I mean, we've seen, like, obviously this is, I mean, there might be a pattern, but I mean, I feel like this was like a one-off because there's no way that you shoot this horribly for more than one game. Like, I know I was talking to some fans about like, this isn't like, they were worried about like all these slow starts or whatever, but I mean, this just like, I think at this point in time, the slow starts, you don't ever want to have it, but I think Iowa State does a great job. Like, I think I've seen more games than not where Iowa State comes out with the first punch. I mean, we saw this with Kansas. We saw this with Auburn back in Maui. Now, I think in the road games, Texas Tech, Iowa, and West Virginia, yes, we did come out sloppy, but we went 2-1 out of those road games. So I think this, you are going to have like these starts where like you're trying to figure out rotations. And I mean, with the Milan injury and the quick turnaround from him announced being injured indefinitely to the West Virginia game, which was that Saturday after they announced the injury Wednesday. That's a very short time to really adjust your practice period. It's like, you only have like, what, 1 or 2 practices before you have to go to Morgantown. So I think with time, the team's going to be much better. They're going to be able to understand where they need to pick up the slack a little bit without having Milan Mocilovic, who can give you more versatility on the offensive side of the basketball. And this is where you kind of want to see Keyshawn Gilbert or Tane Bellisci or Nate Heisey kind of take that next step up and be that second scorer out of the perimeter when Curtis Jones is not getting the looks. You need another guy who can consistently hit his threes.
Yeah, man, I completely agree with that. Like you said, there's just going to be a have to be a second person that emerges. Like, you can't have Cujo be the one that makes threes every night. I think Keyshawn's going to have to step up. I think Taman's going to have to step up. And I got to feel like at some point the shot, three-point shot's going to have to start coming down for Heisey. And I was thinking, hey, maybe if he is in a slump, maybe it's time to maybe give Noyes Andrusitis a look. That could make possibly he's instant offense. Obviously, he may be a liability defensively, but like, I don't know. That's a possible solution if he continues down that road. I do think that he will continue to get better.
Yeah.
As the season rolls on.
Yeah. And I think Nate Heisey talked about himself. Like, he knows that he's in a slump, but he still has the confidence to take shots, and the guys around him all have the confidence because Nate Heisey's been in basketball for like 4 or 5 years. So he knows he has a shot. You would love for it to start falling, and maybe this upcoming game on tomorrow against UCF, this could be a good opportunity for Heisey to take more shots and then hopefully see some of those really drop and to build up a little bit more of his confidence.
Yeah, I agree. I will say one thing that I do think the Cyclones need to improve on is taking better care of the basketball, because they had 14 turnovers in Saturday's game and they were playing a little bit sloppy. But obviously, I mean, when West Virginia knows what you're going to do, and you have a slashing guard that likes to go inside, and you've only made one 3-pointer, they're like, oh, that's all we got to do is just go in there and guard the paint and then force them to make threes. We're done. So, like, I do think that was a possible thing, and West Virginia plays good defense. And I mean, it reminded me. I watched like little bits of the game. It reminded me of old Press Virginia from the Bob Huggins days.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. That's what I saw out of this defense. I mean, I'd have to take a look at who really got a lot of those turnovers. But yeah, West Virginia they obviously saw the scouting report. They obviously saw. Now, one thing I did say with my buddies is the way Joshua Jefferson dribbles, because he's a much bigger guy, his dribble's going to be a little bit out and maybe a little bit higher. So by nature, he's going to have a higher dribble, which is vulnerable to more turnovers. So you kind of want to see a little more aggression when it comes to the guy, to the front court, just putting up a shot, not hesitating when there's an open opportunity. But I think a reason why they might hesitate a little bit is because of that defense, that the pressure right. that West Virginia brings. They might be considering that, so they might throw them off a little bit. So, I mean, that's just what's going to happen. See, taking a look here, Javon Small and KJ Tenner, those were two guys that were pickpocketing the Cyclones.
Mm-hmm.
Javon Small ended with 4 steals and KJ Tenner with 3. And then you had Senkrise Harris, Jonathan Powell, and Eduardo Andre all with 2. So you do have reason to hesitate a little bit, because you want to be like you're so focused on taking care of the basketball that you're not running like the offense that you normally would, just because you're really considering West Virginia's defense and how they're able to pickpocket you. So I think something that can be done to quell that is just moving the ball around, finding those good shots, just quick movement, like ball movement, like side to side.
Yeah.
And either for the guys in the print, either go up quick with the shot. Don't even hesitate. As soon as you catch the ball, just put up a good shot, or you kick it out to the perimeter and try to find a better shot.
No, definitely. And like we said in our brief preview on Thursday, I believe, we said that Javon Small is going to be a problem, and he was. He had 27 points, 7 rebounds, and 5 assists. So he ended up being the guy. And Armani Hasbury, he went 4 of 8 from 3. That was a guy who we talked about a little bit, but he ended up being a problem too, coming off the bench and scoring 12 points for the Mountaineers.
And I think the broadcast said this. They said on the season, Armani Hasbury was like a 20-some percent three-point shooter, and then he proceeds to go 50%. And I mean, if you were Iowa State, you certainly did not have Armani Hasbury shooting that well from the perimeter on the scouting report. So clearly you had West Virginia, had a guy really step up his game. So I mean, that's just kudos to Amadi Hansberry for really having a step-up game and catching us by surprise. So, I mean, that's just, you got to have something. When you want to take down a high-ranked opponent as high as we were, like a top 10 team, you got to have something in your back pocket that catches the other team like by surprise. And that's what Amadi Hansberry brought to West Virginia. I mean, West Virginia, now they're 13-4 overall. They're fourth in the Big 12, and they're game back from Arizona and Iowa State, and that leaves Houston as the only undefeated team in conference play in the Big 12. And not only was this, and then I'm just going to go ahead, and while we're talking about like West Virginia, and you mentioned Press Virginia, we saw that exact same thing happen on the women's side. I was watching the women's game, and I literally saw Press Virginia in real time. I even made a tweet saying, so Press Virginia still exists in Morgantown. It not just happens that it's led by J.J. Quinterly and Mark Kellogg.
I think that might have just been a cultural thing in just their whole basketball program.
Yeah, just relentless defense. Like, full court press from the get-go. So, I mean, quick say, yeah. I mean, for the women's side of things, you unfortunately were without starting guard Emily Ryan, so it was a really difficult position for Iowa State to be in, because that you lost like one of your best distributors and generally like your on-court leader, so you had to rely on freshman Reagan Wilson, Ivy Tanky, to take up the majority of ball handling, and it was a difficult day for them and the team as a whole to really handle the ball. And, I mean, I will say the Iowa State women, they looked better as the game went on, but that first quarter made such a difference. That first quarter shook up Iowa State so much that I think even with those better second, third, or fourth quarters, they just could never recover from the first quarter.
Yeah, usually if you're down in a big hole, it'll take you a while to recover, and usually by that time it's too late. But, like, yeah, I mean, they're growing, they're a young team. Mm-hmm. Obviously, some people, like, you know, will say, well, that's not an excuse. Well, I mean, they're young, they're growing, into, like, especially with that point guard position, because obviously Emily Ryan is going to be gone after this year, so they're going to have to develop that position. And especially with her not going to be there next year, that's going to be a void for them. And then someone is going to have to step up. Someone on this team this year is going to have to step up and play that position.
Yeah. So I mean, I think like if it was anything to take away for Iowa State, Reagan Wilson, Ily Tanky, they learned a lot in this game. Now you got punched in the mouth, which never feels good. But I mean, it's in game experience. I think this should be something that both Reagan and Ily build off of, and hopefully they can really develop some more now that they have some real game experience and what it's like to be the point guard and really play in a tough environment in Morgantown. So hopefully that this will help them in their development. But coming back to the men's side of things, I think for Iowa State, this UCF game tomorrow, well, we might as well talk about UCF now that it's basically like the day before. UCF coming off a 1-point loss to Houston, and UCF, they were feisty against a number 10 Houston.
Yeah. There were some fans complaining saying that last shot for Houston shouldn't have counted because it could have been a travel. UCF is such a tough team to read because they beat Arizona, and then they lost by 51 at home to Kansas. And then, like, they play all these close games against these top teams. They're such, like, an enigma. Like, I don't even know how to, you know, like, break down this thing. I just know that UCF is a feisty team. And, like, their leading scorer, Keyshawn Hall, he averages 16.9 points and 6.8 rebounds, and shoots 42% from the field. So I definitely watch for him. If he gets going, watch out.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, and they score about 78 points a game. This game is not going to be easy. So Iowa State fans, you think this game is going to be easy? You're definitely wrong. Clones are going to have to claw and scratch to earn this one.
Mm-hmm. And then about that Kansas game, I mean, UCF had to host a Kansas team who had just lost at home to West Virginia. So Kansas was playing, they were playing pretty pissed off. So I think that game was a little bit of an anomaly because the way Kansas came in and they were wrecking shop just because of how how much of a chip of shoulder they had after losing at home. If you're Kansas, you never want to lose at home. You know you have one of the best, one of, if not the best environments in all of college basketball. And for you to lose on your home floor to a team who had previously never beaten you on your home floor, you would be a little pissed. And you clearly took out your anger on UCF. And I wonder if maybe Iowa State could have it because they know they played so bad. I think that they're going to have an extra chip in their shoulder because they know they played so terrible against shooting-wise against West Virginia. Maybe, I don't know, UCF could put up a good fight, but in the names, now that all the students are back, now you have a full student section, and it's a Tuesday. This is syllabus week, by the way.
Right.
This is syllabus week for Iowa State. Now all students are back. It's first week of classes. You're not really taking syllabus week serious, so.
Nobody goes to classes during syllabus
week. Not really. But so you're going to expect hopefully you expect a full house to see Iowa State come out with and hopefully light up UCF just because you now have the chip on your shoulder. You got that loss out of the way. You know where to work, what to fix. So
I'm going to say something real quick, man. I'm not going to lie. I was proud of this fan base, man. I did not see any sky is falling rhetoric. Everybody is just like, hey, man, you know what? Losses are going to come, and we just got to move on to the next thing. I was really, really proud.
I think this is also like this is a new feeling for Iowa State. I think it's just for the longest of time, Iowa State had always been the team that was the hunter. They were always chasing down the Kansases, right, the Oklahomas, the Oklahoma States. They were the ones that were chasing. They were the underdogs. Now you're starting to see an Iowa State squad that everybody has put on the dartboard, and they're all shooting darts at.
Yep.
And I think that's just something that it's just a weird feeling that you don't know how to really handle, like you don't know how to feel about it. But I think now that Iowa State is really getting that national attention, talking about like one seeds and possibilities of going to the Final Four and playing for a national championship, this is something new. And I mean, we're going to get everybody's best punch, and the team knows that. So, and the fan base knows that we're seeing something special. So I think they know that we're still in for a long year because I think it's just, you're going to suffer losses. I mean, we had not won in Morgantown since, like, what, Abdel Nader?
Yeah, dude, it's been a decade. The last time they won, I think, was in January of 2015.
Mm-hmm.
So, oh, like...
Yeah. So that place was a house of horrors, and, I mean, it continues to be, so... And, I mean, I also predicted this, and I think you did as well. We predicted that between Texas Tech and West Virginia, they would split that, and whichever game of those two they win, they would lose the other. I mean, it's no surprise there. So getting out of this three-game stretch at Texas Tech, hosting Kansas, and then at West Virginia, you go out of this stretch 2-1. You're sitting pretty. You are still sitting pretty.
Bro, yeah, I'll take that because, I mean, look, Houston escaped. Houston and L is coming for them. Nobody is going to finish unscathed in this conference, dude. Mm-hmm. Like, this conference is a meat grinder every single week, bro. And, like, you basically just fight. Or you just hope that you can split, and if you're like lucky enough to go 2-0 each week, that's really the thing. Is to go. I mean, your goal is to go 2-0 each week, but you'll take 1-1, and obviously there's going to be more losses coming for ISU. But like, and I'm not saying that as like a bad thing. It's just like that's what's just going to happen in the 20-game conference season.
Yeah, it's just the nature of the Big 12. So, yeah, back to this UCF game. I mean, UCF, I mean, we've mentioned it about, like, their games. Yeah, they're feisty for the most part. Taking a look at their previous win was a 95-89 win. So it looks like when it comes to UCF, it depends on, like, who they go against. Because, I mean, we see games where teams get into the 70s. I mean, that was the last three games before Houston, where it was basically like more of a, like it was a 69-68 victory. So Houston was really playing that, like that's just Houston defense doing their job. And I think UCF was matching that. So I think UCF matches what usually happens with their opponents. So they're going to probably, if it's a defensive slugfest, their defense on our defense, they're going to be matched up. They're going to go up against each other and come down to who gets more stops. And then offensively, it just comes down to who can put up better shots. So
yeah, I will say the advantage that the Cyclones have, I think that they'll have in this game, is causing live ball turnovers, because one thing I will say is that UCF turns the ball over a lot. So I think that's going to be, I think that, that like, in order for this game to get out of control and for us to win by, like, double digits, because I think they said we're, like, a 17-point favorite tomorrow. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do think that that's the way that, that the Cyclones can cover in this game, is just they force, they can, they have with the opportunity to force a lot of live ball turnovers.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, and I mean, that's just, that's kind of Iowa State's bread and butter. They force you into really tough passes. They turn you over and then they get you in transition. So I think that'll play right in Iowa State's hands. And again, you're getting, you're probably going to get it. I think I made this when I talked about the Kansas game. You're probably going to get a bunch of cold, angry, pissed off Iowa State fans. This will be the same thing because, my God, it is cold right now here in Ames. We're talking, I think it's like negative like 20, like feels like temperatures. And they had to literally, the university had to move classes online tomorrow because of this weather.
Yeah, dude, I saw that. I'm like, oh, wow.
So, I mean, this is going to be a cold, like, cold day. And, I mean, even athletics is saying, do not line up significantly in advance of the doors opening at 5:30. So, they're looking out for you. But I'm reading one reply that says here, do I bring my space heater or is that frowned upon? Oh, my God. And I actually, yeah, and I had this conversation, if you're familiar with the Cornfield Sports Spot, I was on that, I believe it was Saturday or Sunday, and we were talking about like this whole debacle with the space heaters with the Iowa State PD and the university as a whole. So we talked about that there on that show. So you can find that on their page. But I mean, with it being this cold, there's nothing, there's no better feeling than getting inside of warm Hilton Coliseum and really watching Iowa State desirably beat the piss out of UCF. Because I think. I mean, I'm saying this repeatedly. This is the message I want to, this is the main thing I want to see out of this squad. I think there needs to be new fire lit under them because they know they can never play like that bad ever again. So I think they're going to go, they're going to put in full effort. They're going to continue to work on those daily habits that TJ always talks about. And it's just, I think Iowa State, they're going to take this home game. They get to relax. And I think they'll force those turnovers. And I think that once it gets the crowd going, UCF has never played in Hilton Coliseum, I don't believe so.
They never have played in Hilton.
So in that case, I don't know how UCF will handle the environment. If they handle it well, then props to them, but we'll see.
All right, Cody, let's look at the action from Saturday. I'm going to share my screen. We're going to look at that, break that down, give our thoughts on that.
Yeah.
Man, it was a wild day in college basketball, bro.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, look at Auburn. Auburn going on the road in between the hedges, obviously not in between the hedges, but like they're in Athens. They miss a shot with Georgia misses a shot with 0.3 seconds to go. Auburn survives in Athens, 70 Georgia.
I mean, once again, Auburn being tested without having Janai Broome. So you had Tahad Pettiford step up with 24 points to be Auburn's leading scorer. And Auburn continues to prove that they are, in fact, the number one team in the country. They're going to these difficult road environments, and they're winning these games. And that's what you want to see out of a number one overall team.
Yeah, man. And then Auburn's biggest rival, Alabama, number four, goes on the road to number eight Kentucky at Rupp Arena. Kentucky probably played their best game of the season, and it still wasn't enough as Alabama edges them out.
Yeah. I think Kentucky fans, their biggest concern is the defense, because I believe this is the third or fourth game on the year where Kentucky has allowed, well, no, this is the second game that they have allowed 100 points scored in their building. So that has to be, some bells need to be ringing when it comes to that Kentucky defense, because you cannot allow these teams to put up triple digits in your building.
Yeah, man. It's basically like watching BYU last year, because they were good offensively, but like if the right team caught fire and they can't defend, yeah, that's tragic. And look at this: Tennessee goes down in Nashville as Vanderbilt beats Tennessee 76-75.
I mean, now I think Is Vanderbilt going to... Vanderbilt, I mean, we know the SEC is going to have a lot of teams that are going to be gunning for tournament spots. Do you think Vanderbilt will be one of those teams? Because, I mean, we talk about like that upset win, but if you take a look at the rest of the schedule, pull up like Vanderbilt's schedule and take a look at this, what, the stretch that they have. So they got that win over 10.
Hmm.
But take a look at the stretch that Auburn has, or Vanderbilt has, excuse me.
If they can get at least, was it, 5, 6, 7? If they get 3 of these, they'll be a tournament team.
Yeah, I'm looking at this right now. Yeah, I'm looking at this right now. I mean, you got to go at Alabama. You got to host Kentucky. You're at Oklahoma. I think they can win that Oklahoma game.
Oklahoma.
Yeah, I feel like Oklahoma, they started out so hot, but I think in conference play, they just stunk up the place.
Yeah, I don't think they got, they're used to this SEC basketball.
Yep, and then you have to go to Gainesville, which is, I mean,
you the saw the man is wild.
And then you get to host Texas, which could be a nice little breather before you have to host number one Auburn. Then you got to go back, then you got to go into Knoxville, and then you got to go to Rupp Arena. And on top of that, you host Ole Miss, you're at Texas A&M, and then you are hosting Mizzou. So.
Mizzou, yeah.
And then Georgia's thrown in there as well. You have Georgia in there, so, and Georgia has shown to be a feisty team. So this stretch, ooh boy.
Bro, I am telling you, SEC is must-watch basketball, like, Cyclone fans, I know that y'all are sort of against the SEC, but just for an entertainment value, SEC is must-watch college basketball. Definitely suggest to watch their games. And when you look at this upset in the Big East, Xavier goes on the road to five serve in Milwaukee and beats number 7 Marquette. Wow.
Wow.
Yeah.
I'm looking at this game. The box score is the thing with like the final score. The big thing that I'm noticing is I'm taking a look at the game flow for this game. The big reason Xavier was able to beat Marquette was they were able to open up a big enough gap. They were at one point leading Marquette by 17. Wait, no, let me take a look. Let me make sure my math is correct. Yeah, 17 points. Xavier at one point had a 17-point lead over Marquette. So when you open up a gap that big on the road and you take the crowd out of the game, you have a good shot of winning. Now, Marquette was still feisty. They were crawling back into the game. They were getting a lot of defensive stops. But unfortunately, they were not able to get over the hump. And ultimately, Xavier gets the 2-point win over number 7 Marquette. And that gives Marquette their first conference loss.
Yeah, I mean, that's a shocking line from our kid. And then we will go down and look at some of the other big matchups. Purdue goes into Outson, goes all the way to the West Coast, gets a huge win on the road over Oregon as Purdue moves to 7-1 in Big Ten play.
So Purdue's still looking like a pretty solid team. I mean, they're not the same, I wouldn't say, as when they had Zach Edey, but Purdue's still a force in the Big Ten. And I think that Big Ten, the top of the Big Ten is going to be very competitive with Michigan State and Illinois having actually just played each other yesterday.
Yep. Yeah, we're going to go after that. I just wanted to close out this Saturday's action.
Yeah. You seen the right below it? You seen Creighton right there?
Yeah, Creighton goes, yeah. They had a huge win too. Creighton going on the road, upsetting UConn in stores.
Yeah, and that win for Creighton snapped UConn's 28-game home winning streak. Mm-hmm. Let me take a look at the name. Jemiah Neal for Creighton had 24 points on the day off of 10 of 16 shooting. So he was the main motor behind this upset over UConn.
Yeah, man. It's just a great game by him and also by Kalkbrenner, 16 with a double-double, 16 points, 10 rebounds.
So, chaos on that Saturday. And then we go to yesterday, and we mentioned Michigan State. Yeah, we mentioned Michigan State and Illinois. The big story that I was hearing about this was, I believe, Illinois fans were calling for, was it, they were calling for bad officiating because of the foul trouble. Like, a couple guys, was it one guy for Illinois fouled out, and the fans were not happy with it?
Yeah, they were complaining about refereeing. But Trey Holloman had a huge game with 17 points, and Michigan State is undefeated in the Big Ten right now, 7-0. Wow.
So, I mean, Michigan State, still a power, and I mean, it's no surprise under Tom Izzo, like, their only losses on the year were to number one Kansas and Memphis has proven to be a solid team in the American, and they had a good rebound on Sunday against Charlotte after they had lost at Temple.
Yeah, PJ Haggerty continuing to have a great season for them, 18 points, 8 rebounds, and 3 steals.
Yeah, so overall, this weekend had a lot of crazy things happen. That Saturday had a lot of ranked teams lose, and also, I mean, Saturday had a couple ranked teams lose, and I mean, I think in that week, I think I saw a tweet where it said, like, in the past week of college basketball, 18 or 19 of the top 25 teams all took a loss at some point.
That's insane.
So, I mean, so that explains, like, kind of, like, where it ties in a little bit to the AP poll, because I was talking to some, like, fans, and they were concerned that the AP poll may drop them outside of the top 5. Some were saying, like, 5 or 6, and I was like, if the AP poll were to drop Iowa State below 5, I would have been really, really shocked just because of all the chaos that happened around Iowa State. So, I mean, Iowa State ends up being number 3 in the country, so they're still in the top 3 with Auburn and Duke. And, I mean, it's clear that in college basketball this year, Auburn, Duke, and Iowa State have all established themselves on their own tier. They have separated themselves from the pack when it comes to college basketball.
Oh, definitely, definitely. And real quick, before we get off, I wanted to get your thoughts on tonight's college football playoff national championship game, Ohio State Notre Dame. What are your thoughts?
I mean, this was a matchup. I mean, I think if you're any of these fan bases or you're a non-SEC fan, this was what you wanted. This is what you wanted to see. You get to have a good national championship that doesn't involve the SEC, and you get to watch all the SEC fanboys cry about not being in the national championship. Did you see, there was a clip, today was inauguration day for the 47th president, Donald Trump. And apparently this one guy called in talking about, like, he was complaining that Alabama was snubbed from being in the college football playoffs, which I found pretty hilarious.
Freaking Alabama, dude.
It was stupid, but hilarious. But back to this national championship, Ohio State, this one, looking at this one here, and this is just a good redemption story for both squads. I mean, for Notre Dame, obviously, you had the bad loss to NIU in week 2, and ever since then, they have been going scorched earth, and they've been winning all their games. And they got here. You can say the same for Ohio State after that devastating loss to Michigan, where you only put up 10 points when you were a 17-point favorite, and you should have stomped Michigan. Both teams come in with a chip in their shoulder, with playing with fire, and I mean, they both went scorched earth. Talk about Notre Dame's path to the college football, to the national championship. Theirs was a little more difficult than just playing on the field. I mean, you had a 10-point win at home against Indiana. Then you had a very weak Georgia team. You won that by 13. And then Penn State gave you a real tough test until the very end. So Notre Dame has fought. Like, they've been in tougher games. And then for Ohio State, they've done it the other way. They've been going scorched earth for the most part. Tennessee, Oregon, and then Texas. Texas was a very competitive game, but the defense ultimately is what allowed Ohio State to build up a lead, and they were able to separate themselves away from Texas. And I think that's going to be one of the stories for this national championship. How will Notre Dame's offense be able to handle Ohio State's defense?
And I think that the key for me is, like, how is this Notre Dame secondary going to respond? Their secondary is very, very young, Cody. So, I mean, going against an experienced bunch of Ohio State receivers. That's going to be the matchup for me that I see. That's going to be that's going to loom large in this matchup. Who do you got winning it all?
I got to go Ohio State. I like the way they play. They've played more, just obviously with the way they've come out. And I mean, the defense is what really is the main reason I'm going to Ohio State. I think that defense, they're going to get stops. They're probably going to force a couple turnovers on Riley Leonard. And I think that will help Ohio State win the national championship.
Yeah, I got Ohio State winning it. I think it'll be closer than what the experts predict, though. I think Notre Dame will be there in the first half. I just think Ohio State has way too much firepower. And, I mean, if Will Howard throws it deep to Jermaine Smith on the first play and they score, I think it's just a route from there on in. I don't think Notre Dame has enough firepower on offense to keep up with Ohio State. I think Ohio State turns it up and wins it going away late.
For sure. I mean, this is just going to be a finally at it. I mean, this is national championship, and wow, this was, well, now that we're at the national championship, what were your thoughts on this 12-team playoff? Now we can form a little bit of a more informative analysis because of where we're at.
Yeah, I didn't know if I would like this 12-team playoff, but I am a big proponent of this 12-team playoff. I thought for sure they were going to put Alabama in, they didn't, and I'm like, wow. I think this is a good system to really pick who is going to be a worthy national champion. I do think that they're going to have to do something about the seeding, though. Just really, really with, like, the 8 and 7 seed making it. And, like, I do feel like some teams were a bit overseeded. So, I guess we'll see. Because I think that might be a thing that you get, especially with these big conferences. You're going to have a lot of these conferences where some teams will have, like, loaded schedules, or they have none schedule, no, like a very, very easy schedule, and you roll a 12-0. So I think if you're more balanced, you're probably going to have, like, one or two losses coming in.
For sure. And, I mean, that's what this allows you is now, like, you don't have to worry about the fact that if you lose a game or two that you're no longer in even contention to get for a chance to the national championship with that loaded schedule.
Yeah, and now, I mean, after this, the countdown begins to Ireland for Farmageddon in Dublin.
Yeah. I wonder how much Bush we're gonna export over to Ireland, or are we just gonna run the city dry of Guinness?
I don't know if this is, Cody, I think for the first time, I don't think this is a feat that we're going to accomplish, man. The Irish drink a lot. I don't know. I mean, Iowans drink a lot, but the Irish, man, they're on a different level, man. I don't know if this is a feat. We can try, but I don't know if we'll win this one.
I mean, unless we send a bunch of Iowa State fans who happen to be Irish, so.
Hey, maybe.
It's a possibility. Hey,
maybe we convert a lot of them and not wear that disgusting K-State purple, even though I really do like the color purple. But in that sense, I don't like that K-State purple. But anyways, thank you guys for tuning in to the Believe in Iowa State podcast. As always, we thank you for everybody who always watches our live streams, the live stream signals. We love you. Thank you. And if you guys need to reach out to us on Twitter, I am at SciTieGuy. Cody right here is at Matt Campbell Impersonator. Remember to rate us 5 stars and leave us a great review. We are an up and coming podcast, so any positive comments will be great. We're trying to be up in the algorithm so we can be more listened to. Also, we also have 5 different forms of social media that we can be found on. Believe in Iowa State, BLEAV. Well, now 6. But here we go. We have Facebook, YouTube, TikTok, Instagram, and also LinkedIn now. LinkedIn does videos. It's through my page. So If you're on there, find us on LinkedIn at my name, Tyler Carter. You can look through there. So for Tyler Carter.
And for Cody Van Cielo.
This is the Belief in Iowa State podcast. Roll clones, baby.
Let's go, State.